Thanks, Ambika. So the purpose of this study was really to try and expand the genetic resources available in Agrostis. So, and the idea is really to have sort of a platform for developing new genetic markers that can be used for studying the Agrostis genome. And also, we've had this ongoing interest in transposable elements, and so it's one way of also looking at those. So Agrostis stolonifera is the one we're most used to, so that's creeping bentgrass, and it's among 150 to 200 species of Agrostis, and the taxonomic classifications of these are pretty complicated because there's a lot of interspecific and intergeneric hybridization going on, and so the taxonomy of Agrostis, and with most turf grasses for that matter, is pretty complex, and so we're hoping we can use some of these resources that we're developing to sort of resolve some of those questions. Agrostis represents a polyploid series, and Agrostis stolonifera is a highly outcrossing allotetraploid. Some of our cytology work, in collaboration with Azhar Hossein at the USDA, it confirms that there's lots of genome instability in Agrostis, and so we see things like asynchronous chromosome replication and extranuclear chromosomes and things like that, and that suggests that the genome is sort of a young genome, and it's in the process of evolving. And this genome instability that we see, it may be beneficial to Agrostis. So if you think about the way we maintain and manage Agrostis, we're mowing it at less than an eighth of an inch, and it never is allowed to go through sexual recombination. And so that limits its ability to introduce new genetic variability. And so having an unstable genome may be a benefit and may allow for that to happen. Another point is that back in the 40s, Barbara McClintock, her work on transposable elements, she proposed this idea of genome shock. And so this is the idea that a genome can respond pretty quickly in response to stress. And a lot of her work was obviously on transposable elements, and she thought that they were maybe tied together. So again, I'm focusing more on transposable elements for this research, and transposable elements are mobile genetic elements, and so these are small pieces of DNA that can move throughout the genome. They're typically characterized by their structure and mode of transposition. And you can imagine, and there's different classes and different sizes and all this type of thing, and you can imagine that if some of the bigger elements are being repeated and if they're distributed throughout the genome, that can influence genome size, organization, structure, and all those kinds of things. So they're typically present in high copy number. And some of the aspects that we're most interested in about these is that they've been implicated and they seem to be involved in stress response. And so when you subject plants to various types of stress, a lot of times we see an increase in transposition of these transposable elements. So the class that we've been spending most of our time working on are mites, and mites are miniature and very repeat transposable elements, and I'll talk more about them later, but basically we're interested in these because they have some evidence suggests that these can give rise to small RNAs, and those are also involved in gene expression, or can be, and so we're interested in them in that regard too. And also, in Agrostis specifically, earlier this year we published a couple of papers, and we can adapt mites and other transposable elements pretty easily for genetic marker development. So for this particular project, we were interested in applying some of the next-gen sequencing technology to try and just gather a little more information on the Agrostis genome. And so some of our previous work was based on an earlier study by Rotter et al., and basically with that study, they were sequencing EST sequences, and they sequenced roughly just over 10 megabases of sequence and just over 16,000 ESTs. Now, they were focused on EST sequences. We were focused on genomic sequences, and we looked at four different Agrostis libraries. We had a velvet bentgrass, colonial bentgrass, and two creeping bentgrasses, one which was PenA1, and the other was one of the parents to one of the mapping populations we've been working on. Basically, with this information, you can see that we're able to recover more than tenfold the amount of sequences generated in the initial study, and again, per library, we're able to get about 10 times the amount of megabase sequence data to work with. So part of that initial study was to characterize the transposable elements. And again, since they were working with EST sequences, you can see that there weren't that many. And that makes sense because if you have big transposable elements that insert into a gene, it can disrupt the gene function, and so it won't be maintained by the plant. And so, but in our study, we were looking at the entire genome, so we weren't confined to just that gene space. And you can see that we had significantly higher proportion of our libraries represented transposable elements. One of the interesting things about this is in the Rotter et al. Study, they saw a significant difference in the number of certain classes of transposable elements in comparison when they compared creeping bentgrass to colonial bentgrass. We didn't really see major differences in ours when we compared the different species, but again, we saw several thousand of these instead of 100, so we had a lot more information to work with. The class of transposable elements, as I mentioned, that we've really been focused on and that we've been spending our time working on are these mites, or miniature inverted repeat transposable elements. And they're characterized by having this conserved target site duplication which flanks the mite. And so here you can see a TAT shown in red that flanks the mite. And then they have these conserved terminal inverted repeats here shown in blue. And those are at the terminal ends of the mite. And then depending on the age of the mite, this internal sequence can be quite variable. And so if it's been mobilized relatively recently, then the sequence is pretty conserved. If it's more of an ancient mite, then that sequence is typically more variable. So we use FindMite, which is a specific tool for finding mites in sequence data, and basically it just looks for these target site duplications and terminal inverted repeats. So it can find things that aren't mites too, but just look like them. But our initial analysis, basically we found 495 based on that EST sequence data published by Rotter et al. And then with this 454 sequence data, we found 70,000 of these roughly in each of the different agrostis libraries we look at. And so again, we had just a lot of these to work with. And so one of the questions and one of the difficulties in working with mites is how do you characterize these things? Because as I said, a lot of times they don't have a lot of conservation or sequence identity within this internal region. And so one way to do that is to just focus on these terminal ends. And so we look at the target site duplication and then the terminal inverted repeat. And then again, that internal sequence can be variable. And so if we start, basically we take everything that has, in this case, a TA target site duplication and stick them together in one big pool. And then we start filtering that list based on conservation among this terminal inverted repeat. And then we start extending that throughout that internal sequence just for a few more bases and see how we can cluster those sequences together. So basically, we're just clustering them based on sequence identity at the terminal ends of the mites. So once we do all that, we removed single element clusters, and then did some Perl scripting and things, and basically just performed all possible pairwise sequence alignments with all the elements that we identified, and then we plotted the alignment scores. So things that have a good alignment to one another will have a positive score. The longer the alignment, and the better the alignment, the better the score. If they don't have a good alignment, then they have a negative score and it doesn't work pretty well. So if we plot those, we get something like this. And so here's an example of that. And basically, this is some data from the velvet bentgrass library. And we clustered things in this example based on having a TA target site duplication. And within that group, we found 23 different clusters having that TA target site duplication. So these would be divided into individual clusters based on that next sequence, the terminal inverted repeat and that extension into that internal region. So basically we had these 23 different clusters, and with our analysis we would have 23 individual plots like this. And so this particular example, we're looking at this cluster, so all the sequences in this group would have that sequence shown at the bottom. And then we took all the elements, or each element from that cluster, and did a pairwise alignment with all the other elements. So all the elements from here, and did a pairwise alignment with here, and plotted the scores here. All the elements with this group, plotted the scores here. And basically with this, you can see that all the elements within this particular cluster have a positive alignment and a pretty good alignment score. And when you compare them to all the others, that's not the case. So since we sequenced four different genomes, two creeping bent grasses, one colonial, and one velvet bent grass, if we did this, by doing this cluster analysis, we were able to identify certain sequences that are groups of sequences. So these are clusters made up of several mites. And so we were able to identify these clusters that are unique to certain species. And so here's an example of one that was unique to the velvet library we were working with. And it didn't show up in either of the creeping libraries or the colonial library. And similarly, here's one that shows up right on the edge here that's conserved in the colonial bentgrass library but was absent in all the others. And we found every possible combination, essentially, so things that were unique to creeping. We also found things that were conserved between two libraries or pairs of libraries, so things that were conserved between velvet and creeping or velvet and colonial or creeping and colonial, that sort of thing. And so the idea with that is since we've identified these sequences that are potentially genome-specific, we've already shown that we can pretty readily develop genetic markers based on those sequences. And so the idea is now we have this pool potentially of genome-specific markers that we can use to sort of ask some questions based on the evolution of Agrasta species. And so that's really about all I have. So the basically with this study, we generated a lot more sequence data than what was previously available in Agrastis. And we didn't really find any major differences in the larger classes of transposable elements that we looked at, but we were able to find, when we looked at just the mites, certain library-specific elements, which is good, or it's kind of like what we were looking for there. And then finally, we're hoping we can also use these as a way of sort of assaying the level of genome instability in Agrastis. And so that's one of the things that we've been looking at. And the nice thing about working with transposable elements is, particularly in many turf species, these may be a source for inducing genetic variation. So particularly since these can be mobilized in response to stress, maybe we can subject the plants to stress, induce a transposition event, which could potentially act as, say, like a mutagenesis type approach, and then identify interesting plants from that and then vegetatively propagate them. So that would be the idea behind that. So with this, I'd like to thank Gunhwa Jung and the National Turfgrass Evaluation Program for supplying the plant material that we used in the study. The University of Illinois High Throughput Sequencing Facility did all of our 454 sequencing work, and they're fabulous to work with. The United States Golf Association and the U.S. Department of Agriculture for supporting the research. So with that, I'll answer any questions if there are any. Thank you.
We have time for questions.
I talk fast. Sean. That's one of the ideas, yeah. So again, if they have a high level of sequence identity, then they are more likely to be recently active.
Do you have signs that someone might be active in
Agrastis? We don't have any evidence of that. We've been looking for them, but they can be hard to find. Typically, the way they're found is you identify a mutation or something in a gene that you're interested in, and then you trace it back to a mite. So we don't have that at our disposal. Yeah?
I'm not real familiar with mites. What part of the genome are they in, the coding or the non-coding?
They're distributed throughout the genome. So if you look at the initial Rotter et al. Study, they found several, or we found several from that data in genes, in ESTs. But also, because they are transposable elements and they can disrupt gene function, typically, they're more prevalent in non-genic regions. Yeah?
Can you break down frequency, presence, or absence? Is that right, or do you have a lot of...
They can be, and this is obviously an ideal picture, you know. So this particular example here, this mite insertional polymorphism, the way that works is you design PCR primers that flank the mite, and so they're in, say, a gene or a sequence of interest. And basically what you're assaying here, we're looking at a diverse set of germplasm, and we're looking in instances where a sample has the mite, it would have the higher band, and where the mite's either left or was never inserted, you'd have the shorter band. And so that's definitely the presence-absence that you're talking about. This example over here is mite display, and it's sort of a modified AFLP technique, and so you get basically just lots of bands. Yeah? Well, so Agrostis is a major species that we work with in the turf industry. It's creeping bentgrass. It's commonly found on golf course putting greens. And our main interest in looking at it this way is that there's not a lot of genetic resources available in Agrostis. And so it's not a model organism. And so one of the questions is, how can we develop usable genetic markers without having a good reference genome? And so that's why we took this approach. Okay. Thank you.